Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I'm not sure which part of today's conversation I enjoyed the most. Talking with a woman who was a trailblazer for women in the trades. Talking with a woman who takes safety very seriously. Talking with a woman who helps other women in the trades deal effectively with sexism. Or talking with a woman who speaks in all caps when she talks about ageism. Maybe it was talking with a woman who, at age 65, is embracing her next career, making it an adventure and tackling each hurdle like a superhero. Happily for me and you, these women are one woman. Max McGee is a force to be reckoned with. It was my good fortune to have her come onto my radar. It's the good fortune of women in the trades that she's embracing her next chapter with such consideration and energy. Listen now. I think we can all agree that story, people's stories, are interesting, incentivizing, motivating, but there are some stories that I love even before I hear them. Such is the story with today's guest. May I start with a little of my own background? Back in the 70s, there were two job paths that really excited me: auto mechanic and long-haul trucker. But I was not bold enough to pursue careers so far out of the norm for women in those days. My guest today is not so encumbered. Brenda is a union carpenter and knows how to weld, and she's been a professional model since the age of 19. I love the fact that I can say all of that, and most people nowadays would say, cool, not what? Like so many people, COVID changed Max's. Yes, her name is Brenda, but I have permission to call her Max. COVID changed Max's life. The result for her? Gott Street Blues, working clothes for working women. And who best to design clothing for women in construction than a woman who's worked in construction? I am so looking forward to hearing this story. Brenda Cumby McGee, Max, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I love talking to other women my age.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, good. Now, I understand that construction was an early love, but modeling was your first career. Fast forward today, you've had success in both. Tell us your story.
It started out with a 10-year-old girl beating up her only brother and taking his red dump truck. It was a Tonka dump truck. So it was a nice big heavy metal dump truck that I wanted from the day he got it for Christmas. So I would beat him up and take it and go play with it. And my mother always took one of us to the grocery store every week. If you went, you knew you had to go get everything she asked for off the shelf. But at the end, you got a gift. You get to buy a toy. So that was like why you wanted to go. And I picked out a conveyor belt. And she's looking at me like, that's what you want? I'm like, yes, that's what I want. It was a little orange and white thing, that kind of yellow orange, that construction look. And you could fill it with dirt and actually spin it so that it would dump the dirt on the other side. So I took that and my brother's red dump truck, and I got in my mother's side garden. She had a beautiful yard, big, huge gardens, and I decided to put up a whole construction site. That was at the age of 10. But by the time I hit 12, I was very interested in her clothing. She had beautiful clothing. She came from the era of the matching shoes, the purse, the gloves, the hat, the whole gamut. And I'd be up in the room trying on all her stuff, killing her high heels because my little feet didn't fit in her shoes. So, of course, I'm in the middle of the shoe with my heel, and she's like dying because she thinks I'm going to break them. But I would dress up in all this stuff, and I just loved it. So I said, I want to be a model. And then everybody found out I wanted to be a model at the age of 12. But I was such a tomboy that it kind of threw everybody off because my brother was my playmate. He taught me how to play sports. He taught me how to play basketball, which I ended up playing all through high school, rec league, you name it. I was on the first girl on a boys basketball team on Saturday mornings that my mother would take us. She'd pile all the guys in the car with me, and I was a girl as long as I was in the car, but the minute I got out, I became one of the guys. So she used to just get tickled about that. And then it was fashion just kind of took over. It's like, I like to dress up. I like to look pretty. But I was still this tomboy at heart. So sorry about that. I'm still this tomboy at heart. And it was, okay, you can do both. So I dressed up at school, but in school, I was always in the wing that had the auto shop, that had the welding class, that had the architectural shop, and had the art studio. I love to paint. Got that from my mother as well. So I was in art studio all the time, or I was either across the hall in the welding class, or I was in the architectural class making drawings and stuff. So it was kind of one of those things that it was being creative. It was being creative, and you could be pretty at the same time. So I liked them both. And so it came from a young age that construction meant something. And then I found out that my father, just remember this, he actually did architectural drawing in high school. And my dad was born in 1914. So to see anything that he did, my grandmother was like, "Well, you got that from your dad." I'm thinking I got everything from my mother because she was like the hands-on, the handy woman in the house, staining, painting, fixing stuff, you name it, she did it. My father, not so much. And ended up, I saw these wonderful drawings that he did, and they were perfect. And I'm like, okay. So it's kind of both of them blended together, right? And I ended up, I modeled. I wasn't making a ton of money. I was doing the regular, we call them regular size models. That's those little skinny girls. I could never get that skinny. I'm a big girl, big bones. And then I ended up going into plus size modeling. Now that was the ticket for me. That was my niche. Because not only did I not have to worry about being skinny, they fed us on the jobs. So we got food. The skinny girls didn't get any food. So we'd be sitting there looking at them as we're stuffing our face with bagels and whatever. And they're like, okay, eat up, girls. You know, we don't want you to lose too much weight. That was right up my alley. So it was perfect. And I did very well in the plus size niche. And so that went on until I was 34. And then I had a female emergency. I had to have some surgery. And of course, modeling doesn't pay you any type of insurance or anything like that. You don't get a pension, you don't get any of those things. And my mother kept saying, "You need to think about the future." You know how our mothers are. They'll pound you until you do what they tell you to do. And it ended up, I had to have the surgery. I had to get a loan for the surgery. It's crazy. And by that time, I had started working trade shows and being a model on the booths in the trade shows. And I met a gentleman by the name of Larry Cooper, who was a consultant for Anheuser-Busch. And him and I just started talking, and we're talking. And the next thing I know, I'm telling him how the booth is put together. And he's looking at me like, "Who is this woman?" And he's like, "How do you know that?" I said, "Because I'm looking at it. You did this. I could put things together. I can see, I have this vision to be able to see things, to deconstruct them or to construct them." And so we just became fast friends. Next thing I know, I'm all over the country with Anheuser-Busch being one of their models. And so this surgery comes up. I have the surgery. My mother's at my house taking care of me. She's sitting at my little desk. I had a small one-bedroom apartment, and the phone rings. And I'm laying on the couch, and I was like, you know how you try to get up to go get something? She's like, "I got it." She answers the phone. All I hear is, "Oh, hey, how you doing? Okay. Yep, she can do that. Yeah, no problem. She'll do that. Okay." And this went on for about 10 minutes, and she hangs up, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like, "Who did you just talk to?" "Oh, that was Larry Cooper. You're going to be a carpenter." "I'm going to be a what?" "You're going to be a carpenter." And I turned into that, you know, that 12-year-old girl that said, "Okay, mom." Because what do you tell your mother? You'll tell her no. So I was like, okay. So I ended up, once I was after my 6-week recovery, I was taken down to the Carpenter's Local 10 with Scott Martinez, who owned Display Services. And he's like, "We're signing you up to be a carpenter. So meet me here, blah, blah, blah." Did all that. You didn't always have to go through apprenticeship, which was kind of cool, but you learned on a job. So my first day on the job is to build Anheuser-Busch's booth on, I believe it was RSNA or FMI. It was a food show. And so what do? I go in this cute little pair of coveralls, my jean coveralls, little white t-shirt, red bandana tied around my head, and a tiny pink toolbox. And I still have that toolbox because it was absurd how I went in there dressed. And it was hilarious because I had a parade of guys coming by the booth. There weren't many women in 1994 at McCormick Place. And if they came in, they came and they left and they never came back. So here's this chick kind of dressed like a model carpenter. And everybody wanted to come see who I was. And they're stopping by the booth and it became a big deal. And so Larry had to stop everybody on the booth and say, look, this is who she is. This is what she's here for. And I don't want anything. So he laid the law down, got to work, and then I almost froze to death that day. It was April in Chicago in the East Building, which sits on the lake, and all the doors were open. There's nothing but concrete and steel. And that wind was coming through, and I thought I was going to freeze to death by the end of the day. And it was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? But what was kind of cool is I liked the fact that I could do something and see what I did by the end of the day. And every day was different. So I actually got hooked. I just learned to dress better. But that dressing better also led to there's no clothes out here for women. So I ended up buying men's work clothes that were very ill-fitting. And I had this story about me on a 16-foot ladder in a pair of men's Carhartt coveralls. I had taken the jacket off because I had enough layers, but I had on these bib coveralls and I'm coming down the ladder. They were way too long. And I stepped on the pant leg and I started to go backwards and I reached and grabbed the ladder. Next thing I know, I slipped. I'm going down the ladder like a cat. I tell everybody, I must have looked like a cat trying to hang on for dear life. Broke up every fingernail, hurt my fingers, everything, but I wasn't going to flip over. So it was this thing like, I need clothes. I need clothes that fit. I'm going to kill myself, right? And so God Street actually became a thought in the first year that I was there. That was 1994. So by 95, I had all designs laid out. I had drawn a bunch of designs. Oh, this would be great. This would be great. Yada, yada. Then the next thing I know, I got offered to work in the building. I did that, worked in the carpenter shop, learned how to make cabinets, all kinds of stuff, put my welding skills to work on a few things, and then decided, nope, I like that show floor a little bit better, a little bit more freedom. So I went back to the show floor and again, same thing, just nothing to wear. So I'm wearing regular jeans that would rip really fast if they got caught, or the, let's not even talk about that inner thigh rub thing that just blows your jeans out. So you're buying tons of jeans, wearing men's shirts that were too big. I remember being on the table saw one day and my shirt sleeve rolled down. It was a man's shirt. And my superintendent came by the table and he stopped as I'm cutting this piece of wood. And I was terrified of the table saw because you could really get hurt on that thing if you weren't paying attention. And he just stood there looking at me and I'm nervous, but I got the wood cut. And once it went through, he said, turn it off. I turned it off. He said, I don't ever, ever want to see you with a shirt on that the sleeve is hanging like that. He said, because if it got caught, it would take your arm. And I was like, okay, all right, I get it. So then I had to go to women's shirts. They didn't fit well. I'm a big girl. And so if they were plus size, they were really, really boxy in the bust and waist area, but they were too short in the sleeves. So it was just still this uncomfortable wear. And they would always, if I got a regular size, they would open at the bust line. And you're like, yeah, okay, now let's hear all that all day, right? So I knew that women needed clothing, but as I moved up the ladder, I ended up becoming the union steward, which was a huge deal down there. They never had a woman as a steward, let alone a Black woman. So I what it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a surprise to me that I actually killed two birds with one stone for them because they needed a black person, and then they're like, hey, this woman thing is, that's a plus. We can get this in too. So I ended up being the steward for 21 years. I was down there 5 years and ended up being a steward for 21 years until the pandemic. So what happened with Port Gott Street, it got put on the back burner and it just sat there for 25 years. And it was kind of weird. It was my girlfriend would ask me periodically, my best friend Monita back home, she is the one who came up with the name Gott Street. Because I was like, what would you call it? We're muddling around with names. And she said, just call it Gott Street. Well, that's the street she lived on. That's the street we hung out on. Okay, well, what about if we put blues behind it for like jeans, like blue jeans? And she was like, okay. So it stopped and we just left it there. So in 2020, when the pandemic hit, McCormick shut down really fast. We were like probably one of the first in industries, the trade show industry, to shut down. We had just finished the auto show and then Housewares was coming in and we got the call. It's not coming. We're shutting down. Everything's shutting down. So I go home and I do all the things I need to do to try and keep the bills paid. My husband was already retired because he's older than me and he's an electrician. And I said, okay, so the heck. I was luckily just turned 60 where I could actually retire. I could do an early retirement, full benefits. Only thing that made sense to me at that moment. I didn't know when this was going to be over. Nobody did. Who did? Everybody was in the same boat, right? It kind of hit us all unexpectedly. And so I sent in my papers. And when the papers got sent in, it was like, now what am I going to do? I said, what am I going to do? I'm too young to just sit down and do nothing. And my husband looked at me, he said, you're going to start that company you've been talking about for the last 20 years. Okay. Went and got the name registered with the state. And then I sat there for all of the rest of 2020. That was August of 2020. And then 2021, we were still in the pandemic. So you still couldn't go out and meet people and do things. And when things started to open up, it was like, do I really want to go out and meet people and do things? Because I don't know if they'll infect me with COVID. So I just chalked up 2020, 2021 to COVID. So I ended up, I had a friend, I started doing some stock trading during COVID to just find something to do and met this young lady named Shima Strickland. Never met her in life. We still talk to this day. She's like, well, anything you need, I'll help you with. And me being that skeptical boomer is like, what's this young kid up to? What's she want? What does she want? Why is she willing to help me? I don't know this girl. And she's like, no, seriously, I'll help you out. So one day we were talking about the clothing company that was just sitting there. And I told her I went and got the LLC. She said, well, what's holding you back? I said, I don't know where to start. She said, you start by getting a pattern maker. I said, what do you mean? She said, go get a pattern maker. You can't do everything yourself. Do you know how to make a pattern? I'm like, no. And she's like, go find a pattern maker. She actually had a degree in fashion design. And found out that's not what she wanted to do. It's funny how the universe just puts people in your life, right? And so I started Googling pattern makers in Chicago, and this Chicago pattern maker just kept coming up, kept coming up, kept. And I was like, okay, let me call this Chicago pattern maker. Her name is Social Herrera Shear. And oh my gosh, I swear she lives so far away from me, but it was like, this is the only person I see coming up. And we ended up talking, made an appointment, signed a contract. She has been a godsend to work with. She is so knowledgeable about all this stuff, and she's taught me so much. I knew a lot about fabrics working with a friend, Marianne Davis, who is a fashion designer, taught me about fashion and the wear and tear of certain fabrics and what this fabric is and what that is. And then I learned a lot at the apparel center when I was modeling. I actually sold to the manufacturers with the woman Margot that I worked with. And so you learn all this stuff, but you don't know that it's going to come in handy later down the road, right? So it all kind of started mixing together. It was like, okay, well, I know what women want in the trades, what they need, because I remember wearing those jeans with those pockets that are what, 2 inches long? 2 inches deep. I can get some chapstick in it, maybe. I might lose it by the end of the day. And was like, I cannot tell you how many jeans. I have a pile of jeans in my house. Half of them I gave away to my girlfriend, Mary, because she was making like purses and crazy skirts and stuff out of denim. And so I couldn't wear the jeans anymore because then the inner thighs were blown out. And so the ones I have left, I use those for gardening and painting. I'm in the house, so nobody cares, right? I'm in my yard. And it was like, this is just, this is crazy that we don't have, in over 25 years, we never had anything on the market that actually worked for women. And then I find out Dovetail comes out. Great company. Don't know them, but what I did find is they were kind of tight for me. They're a slimmer cut. All women aren't slim. And as you hit that menopausal age, man, things start changing. It's like, no, can't get in that. And I don't want to be in that. And I'm not a fan of stretch fabrics. Stretch fabrics wear faster. They break down when you wash them, they break down when you wear them. They start breaking down, and the women don't understand that. So I went back to 100% cotton. And we did some things on these pants that, to try and preserve the pant longer. Double gusseted crotch. So if you wear out that first layer in the inner thighs, you got another layer, just cut them and clean them up, but you can still wear them, right? And deeper pockets, extra pockets. There's key loops on there. I used to hang keys off of my belt loops because I had three offices and I had all these scooters I would drive around in these buildings. And I can tell you walking through an aisle that's loaded with crates and you're turning your body sideways trying to get through, something's going to get caught. And that's what happened. Keys would get caught, rip off the belt loop, keys go flying. So I just came up with everything I could come up with to put on these pants. And I was going to do a pant and a shirt, and I nixed the shirt because the pants became so involved to get them done. And we are now on our third sample run for fit to make sure that the fit is perfect. I mean, my thing is the focus is the fit because I want them to fit well. I want women to be comfortable. You don't have to have on skin tight like jeggings to go to work in. Who wants to work like that? You're bending over all day. So we did a lot of fit issues. I think we took care of as far as the comfort when you first put them on, even after they've been washed, that there's still enough room that you can bend and move, and they're gonna give during the day. 100% cotton. And I try and ask people, do you remember when you broke in your jeans? I don't even think they talk about breaking in jeans anymore. Yeah, breaking that pair of jeans, it becomes your favorite pair of pants because it fits you like a glove. They're just perfect. You didn't even want to wash them. So I'm trying to get back to that. So that's how God Street, just came together. It was out of a sheer need for women to have safe, functional work clothes.
So many thoughts. First of all, I gotta say that I have never had a pink toolbox. I've got a big toolbox. It holds tools. And there's not a single piece of manicure stuff in the box. How many women, or how have you seen the percentage of women change in the job site, work site?
Agnes, when I started, I was it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
I
Yeah.
was it. There was probably a couple of women electricians. There were definitely some that worked in the house at McCormick Place, but on the show floor, I was basically it. And so now I am so jealous. I am not going to lie. I am so jealous. There's so many more women out in the field. So I would say when I started, it was 1% maybe, or maybe a half a percent. Now we're looking at, I think it's 14% women,
Wow.
which is a lot. It's over 1 million women now working in construction. And my jealousy comes in is that now they have this camaraderie that I didn't have. And what's really exciting is to watch them move up. You now have women in the apprentice programs teaching. They're running some of the programs at the schools and becoming a BA as a carpenter. I can speak for carpenters, but not the other ones, because there are women BAs. There's very few BAs as in the carpenter's trade, but they're getting there. And it's really nice to see
What are
all the
BAs?
your BA, or what else do they call them? Their BAs. It's your business agent or your business rep, which would be a BR. That's the person that is the go-to person that they talk to in the local.
Okay.
And they, you know, when jobs come in, those are the ones that make the phone calls to the members saying, hey, are you out of work? Do you need a job? So that's your go-to person in the local. And to see women get those positions is really exciting. It's really, really exciting. And women are, they're so much more into the detail of things and how things work and, you know, just a little bit more understanding when things go wrong because things go wrong. And it's exciting to see them do all this work. And it's growing because women have now realized, hey, I can actually do a job, make the amount of money a man makes. There is no scale where he gets a dollar and you get 70 cents. Everybody's making the same amount of money. Everybody has the same benefits. You know, you don't have to worry about your insurance. Once you hit your journeyman status or your certain amount of hours, like where I worked, you had to have 250 hours a quarter. So in 3 months, I had to make sure I had 250 hours worked to keep my insurance. And yes, sometimes you lost your insurance by a few hours, but you could go and get, you know, the COBRA stuff to get you through. But I think women just realized, hey, I can do this. And there's a lot of women who are really good at what they do. And they have the benefits. They can raise their families, you know. If they don't have a husband, they're a single mom, or, you know, husband just ain't working, you know, and they have to run the house or whatever. She can actually carry everything. And I just see more women getting interested. And I'm really excited that the trade show industry has become kind of a norm for a lot of people because that was an industry nobody knew about. It was like this hidden gem because you're outside, but not outside. They would just open up the doors, you'd be cold, but once those doors closed, it's like working inside in a shop. So you weren't in the elements all day. And then you have women now. I just met some girls that are really interested in being crane operators. Those crane operators, man, that is the person on a job outside. That is the number one person. And when that person goes up to that crane and gets in there, that's it. That person's running that job because that's the person lifting and bringing stuff up to the roof or different floors and whatever. And so you're getting a lot of women into the crane stuff. I love that the welding is becoming very big. Chicago Women in Trades does a lot of welding classes and stuff, and you get to see these young ladies graduating, and it's super exciting. I just didn't have that in 95, 94, 95.
Now, do any of these women, younger women, do they know you were a trailblazer?
They do. I have
Okay.
met a lot of them.
Oh, good.
Now I'm actually going around and chatting with them about what I did. And it's kind of funny because they come to me with, and that's okay. They come to me with some problems that, you know, it's you still have to understand. I infiltrated into a world that was just men. It was really just men. And I had to pick my battles. I had to figure out how to present myself to these guys. Yes, I got the cat calls, some very horrible things said to me, and some of them just didn't want me there. I didn't care. You know, I invited a few of them out on the dock. Come on out here and say that to me. Then they'd look at me like there's something wrong with her. She can't beat me up. No, I can't, but you're gonna know you've been in a fight. That's all I can tell you. So I get a lot of that, which I really, really enjoy helping them understand. Everything is not for you to just fight. Some things you have to look at it for what it is. You deal with it quietly. Some things you can deal with it quietly. And it's just as effective as punching some guy in the nose. You know, it's the same. So I do enjoy that part of it when they're having these issues and they don't know how to really handle it in such a way that it's not going to affect them. Because I don't care what job you work on, what industry you're in, retaliation is real. And it's done in such a sneaky manner that I have to explain to these girls, if you're going to say that, are you ready for this fight? Because that's where you're going, and it's going to be a fight. And so then you kind of teach them to back off. And it's the things I had to learn on my own. And my husband, actually, I worked with him, and I used to confide in him a lot about what was going on. And he would tell me, handle it this way, handle it that way. And I only married him because I couldn't date any other guy outside of the business because I was always working, and nobody understood that I was always working. So I told him, I said, yeah, well, you got me by default.
Oh, nice. Now, surely there's safety, or not safety, or safety, but also strength in numbers. You know, when you're the only woman on a job site, you pretty much probably needed to suck it up.
I did. On a
But
lot of things, I did.
yeah, whereas
I did.
now there's protections and there's, guidelines and all that sort of stuff around.
I mean, but now with the climate that we're in, coming from Washington, there's this boldness of I can say and do whatever. This whole DEI thing, which I just thought was a crock of crap anyway, because most of it was performative for these companies. As you see, they easily just got rid of their programs when they felt threatened by the White House. And so it's basically getting the women to understand. You can speak up in such a way that it's not going to cause you any harm, but you also need to know that you need to have your allies. And sometimes it's not always the women. It's very unfortunate that sometimes women don't support other women because they become very self. It's all about me. And what I do like now is that they have what they call the sisters in the brotherhood. They were starting that when I was probably halfway through my career, and I was so busy, I just really didn't get a lot of time to go to the meetings. And so they talk about the issues that they run into, which is really nice for them. And they do their best to make sure everybody is safe and secure. And if you have any issues, that's where you come and you actually can express your feelings about certain situations. And I think that is extremely important in a job that's predominantly men, because you do run into issues that you probably wouldn't run into someplace else. And then you have to talk about your safety. We've actually had women killed on the job by men in different states that were just angry because they were there. No other reason. They did nothing to them. They just didn't like them to be there. So yes, the safety in numbers it does matter. And I'm very happy that a lot of these women now have that. And what they're also getting that I didn't have is there's a lot of women who were in the trades who are now making safety apparel for them. There's work boots now. I was wearing men's stuff. I was wearing men's gloves, men's, clothing, men's boots, all that stuff. Now there's women's work boots, safety boots. There's the safety vests. There's the coverall safety stuff, the hazard stuff. All the PPE that you need, you can now find in women's sizes. It's still
Okay.
a battle. It's still a battle. It's still on the ground level, but women have really stepped up who have been in the trades and are now saying, you know what? We need this, so let's do this.
Well, it's interesting because that's one of the questions that I was going to ask is whether, your next stop would be because I'm never on a job site, but even driving by, like the flag people I see that are women, they're wearing these big goofy clothes, and I was going to ask if your next
Giant, big
stop was.
giant jackets and the vest. Yes. So it, and now where they're struggling, where the PPE people are struggling, is to get them to purchase the
Okay.
clothing for the women. OSHA did come out with a new ruling that, hey, you have to provide these women with proper fitting clothing. It's dangerous. When I told you I came off that ladder, can you imagine you're out there flagging and that thing gets caught on a big machine going by you, a bulldozer or something? It'll take you down. It's just it's unsafe. So OSHA did say, hey, you got to provide them this clothing. They provide PPE for everybody on the job. Now you got to provide it for women who are smaller. Even men, there's men out there that wear ill-fitting PPE because it's not, they're just smaller guys. But it's just a step in the right direction. It's really exciting that they have these things, and safety has become a number one concern for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to address, and you've done this partly, is both the safety aspect and the comfort aspect and how they're interrelated when you're wearing clothes that are made for a body that's totally different from yours. As the fellow said, your sleeve could have got caught in the saw. You tripped on the ladder. Just so many things when it's just ill-fitting. It matters to both your comfort and be, and then if you're not comfort, that's other stuff on your, if you're not comfortable, it's other stuff on your brain, which could
Absolutely.
just for that split second take your attention away from what you're doing.
Absolutely. That I think the psychological is just as important as the physical, because if your clothes are fitting you well and you feel good in your clothes, you're going to perform differently on that job. Right? So I say that about my pants that I'm doing, is it's to make you look good and feel good, because it's important that you feel great when you walk in. There is no, if it's ill-fitting, somebody's gonna let you know it's ill-fitting. You already know it is, but then to hear somebody say it to you again, it becomes another psychological thing that you have to get over before you start your day or whatever. So you don't want to think about that and not thinking about what you're doing and hurt yourself. I mean, accidents happen so quickly on a job site. I've seen it. I've watched guys get run over by the forklifts. I've seen hands get smashed. I smashed my own hands up, and it is the psychological is just as important as the physical. And so my whole thing about making clothes for women is to make you feel good and look good. You just want to be able to walk out. And I like to tell them, my pants, you can wear them at work. If you don't get them too dirty, you can throw on some high heels and go to the club. That's my thing.
It's interesting too that, you say looking good, and that's not even a matter of ego. That's just a matter of knowing that you're not going to take any shit and abuse. Your clothes fit you properly, so it's a safety feature, and it's nothing to do with vanity necessarily. Yeah, so important. Now, I took this off your website, and I have to read it because it just sounds so cool. The pant. The pant has a tailored fit that can accommodate various body types, sizes 0 to 28. Some features that enhance the functionality of the pants include reinforced knees for a durability, with inside removable knee pad pockets, multiple pockets that are deep and convenient for tools and gadgets, gusseted crotch for ease of movement. Extra features include tabs on both sides of the waistband with D-rings to hang keys or other small items, and double layered fabric in areas that wear out quickly. Now, I realize that you're designing this, you have designed this for the job site, but that sounds exactly like something I would love to have when I'm working out in the garden. Or in,
Oh my God, I'm so glad
well,
you
no,
realized
in days gone by, I had a shop. And it's just like little things, like, where did I put that drill bit? Or got a handful of screws. What are you going to do with them? That sort of thing. So, like, this is not necessarily just for the job site.
No, it's not. And it's funny because I'm an avid gardener, and I garden in those pants I told you with the blown out inner thighs. I can't wait for these pants to get done so I can actually have a few pairs so I can work outside. And what I love about it is, yes, I actually, talking with my marketing person, I want to actually push these towards your DIYers, your gardeners, because there are a ton of women who garden. And what do you have? You have to have that pad to drag around and kneel on. You have, the little bag thing with all the tools and stuff. Why? I can have it right on my pants, right? I can just have them on me instead of dragging all this stuff with me. So yes, these would be absolutely wonderful for gardening. And we have talked about that, and we're also doing just a slight lighter weight pant, a fabric for that. Because when you're outside, it can get a little warm. So with a lighter weight pan with all the same features, but yes, they would be absolutely perfect for gardening. They're great for DIY women at home. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm a hot mess when I'm DIYing. I got stuff everywhere. So.
You'll appreciate the fact of how excited I was when I got my second drill because I had the screw bit in one and the drill bit in the other. I was like,
Wasn't
ah, yeah.
My husband, he said, "Did you ever think you'd end up with a woman who had a shoe fetish and a tool fetish? You know, I'm not safe in any store. I'm just not safe. If you take me to some shoes, I'm there. Tools, I'm just as excited. I love getting new tools. I mean, it's crazy. Love new tools."
I'm with you there. Okay, so now, from what I was reading and from a few things you've said, these aren't on the market yet. Is that correct, or are they?
They are not. They are not. Here's what happened in 2022. Once we got the pattern done, we went to a manufacturer here in Chicago. I never wanted to go out of the country because I'm a union person. I grew up in a union household. So that just didn't set with me. But the guy, actually, when he made the first samples, I wasn't happy with him. It was like, "Did you look at the pattern? Did you use the pattern?" And even social was like, "Something is wrong. The prototype looked amazing. The samples were a hot mess." And it was like, "Okay, this is a problem." So there was a lot of things that had to be adjusted. And then all of a sudden he ghosted me. I didn't talk to this man for over 8 months. I kept calling, emailing. She was calling, emailing, just nothing. He had my fabrics, he had this. And I had to learn about a lot of the stuff with manufacturing, which I thought I knew, I did not know. And so once I got past the, "Okay, what are you going to do" stage, and people are saying, "Oh, go out of the country, it'll be easier." It's not easier. I don't have that control that I would have where I could just get in my car and go drive to your manufacturing shop and wear my stuff. So it ended up, I found another manufacturer here, and I feel kind of bad saying this, but it's true. It's a woman is head of my production. And I have such a wonderful relationship with her because she is as detail oriented as I am. And it's these details. And she would tell me, "Man, these pants have a lot of stuff going on, and we have to do this." And she's explaining the construction of how they have to sew it together and this and that. So her details and my details really make it work.
Well, I think
And
too,
so.
correct me if I'm wrong, but if you need a picture frame, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, it's a picture frame.
Right.
But if you're designing something that's important for women, a fellow might just, it's not that he's trying to mess you around, it's just he doesn't understand because
Right.
he
Well, it
doesn't
was funny because
have.
he asked us, "Why do you need a double fabric gusseted crotch?" And there was three of us. It was me, the pattern maker, and her assistant. And we all sat there and kind of looked at each other. And then we looked at him and said, "Well, because women wear their pants out there the quickest." And he was like, "Oh, well, in the denim that he makes, he doesn't care because you'll go buy another pants. But when you're working in them, you want them to last as long as they possibly can. Would I like to sell you a pair of pants every month and a half, 2 months? Absolutely. Is it ethical in my head? No, it's not, because I've been there and I know how that works." So it is important that you have these little details specifically for women. And he didn't understand it. And so it was just really wonderful to have Diana help me with this and figure out the little things that all the stuff that I wanted to do. It can be done, it just has to be done a certain way. And I didn't know how to do that construction part. So it was pretty exciting to me. And I said, "Man, 5 years, I hope I can snag her to come be in my manufacturing company." Because that's where I would really like to go in 5 years is do my own manufacturing right here in Chicago. I think it can be done.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now those pants are going to become your flagship product by the sounds of it. But
Yes.
you currently, I want to go back to your product line. You're designing clothing for the working woman, celebrates the trades. A lot of your offerings would make great gifts for any gender in the trades. I mean, you've got caps, mugs, tees. I went through your stuff and I saw plumbers, pipe fitters, painters, electricians, carpenters, DIY, even unions represented. First of all, you know what word I couldn't come up with? What are those pictures on the front of a tee called? Are they like transfers or
They're you, most of them are just print
prints?
on demand. They're DTG prints. They're
Oh.
just, you know, silk
Okay.
screen, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what they call it.
There's so much stuff there that, as I say, just make great gifts as well as recognizing and celebrating.
Yes, I tried to cover all the trades. I was fortunate enough to go to the first Women Build Nations trade show. It was every trade that had women in it. And it was just mind-blowing to see all these women. It was a sea of women through this hallway. And I don't even think they realized how big it would be. We were jammed. We were like tuna in a can going through these hallways trying to get to these different classes and stuff. And it was just amazing. I will say the iron workers. Those women, those are some tough girls. They even scared me, and I have a big mouth. Those women are tough. And I'm like, if you can stand up on that building on that iron like that, then you go ahead and do it because I'm not doing it. That part I'm not doing. So it was just wonderful to see all these different women. And so you have to celebrate them all because everybody has their niche, where they're at, what they do well. When I met the underwater welders, those are the ones that really got me. I'm not going underwater welding. I know how to weld, but I ain't doing that underwater all day. In a scuba outfit, for Christ's sake. It is so refreshing to see all these women. And it's really interesting to watch all the older women starting to retire. And I found out there were women who had been there 40 years. They started when they were young girls. I just didn't get to meet them. They didn't get to meet me. We didn't know each other. They were in different states, and it's really interesting to see these women. And now trucking is becoming very big for women. And I said, these pants are great for you if you're in trucking. You know, you got these extra pockets on the side, but you don't have to go digging. And the front pockets are so deep, Agnes, that you can drop your phone all the way in and they will land on your thigh and not in the crease where your leg meets your body. Where you're feeling like, oh my God, it's got big, large, doubled back pockets. All the electricians I know stick their tools in their back pocket and they all have a hole where their clines stick out. So I doubled it. It was nice to be able to take these pants and put them on women who work and then they in the field and they could tell me what they want, what they liked, what they didn't like. It was so helpful. I cannot tell you how helpful that was. Is to be in the trades and know these women so they could actually say, hey, no, this ain't working. That ain't working. This works.
That's great. Oh, yeah, I'm so impressed.
It was wonderful.
Okay, Max, our audience is mostly mid-age women. Some of them have granddaughters who are really interested in a trade but are still bowing to that social pressure that the trades are male jobs. How can they encourage those young women to pursue their passion, no matter which gender is most highly represented?
I think is that they just tell them to just be who you are. That was something my mother used to say to me, be who you are. And I used to look at her like, what do you mean, who I am? What do you like to do? I told her, then you go do it. Nobody cares because nobody's taking care of you but you. So go be you. Go do what you want. Test it out. And the nice thing now is there's places these young girls, like here in Chicago, they can go to CWIT, Chicago Women in Trades. They have wonderful classes. There are nonprofits now that have there's Tools and Tiara in New York. You have Girls Build Kalamazoo in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And then of course CWIT here runs all these wonderful classes and summer programs for young girls. To see if they like it. Introduce them to it. I was excited when I found out Home Depot would let you go make a birdhouse because that's the introduction for some of these young women to get into the trades. Now, Granted, a lot of the stuff that we had in high school coming up disappeared. All the trade stuff that we did, the welding, the metal shop, the mechanic shop, it's starting to come back. So there's different trade schools. There's Dawson here up in Kalamazoo. They just built a, God, it's a couple of $1 million tech school. It has everything from cooking to carpentry. It has everything so these kids can try it. Is my thing is to encourage your daughters to be that individual that they are. You know, encourage them if they want to pick up a hammer. My mother let me tear her garden up for about 6 hours. I had transferred bulbs and everything in different places with this red Tonka truck. She allowed me to do that. And I think that's where we need to allow young girls to explore who they are and not tell them, oh, don't do that. That's a boy thing, right? And not to be loud. My family, I swear, is the first to come up with being the loud family. I think Saturday Night Live copied off of us. We were very loud people. And my mother, she would, you know, if we were out in public and got too loud, she would, you know, bring it down a notch. But she let us be that boisterous voice. She had four daughters. And she was very, you know, hands-on doing things that men did. So she was like, let them explore. They'll land where they land. And I think that is the biggest thing when it comes to young girls who want to get into trades is let them try. They may say, okay, this isn't for me. I've seen it. I've seen young girls get in the apprentice program and they realize this isn't what I want to do. And that's okay. It's okay to do that. But you at least need to, if they have a bit of encouragement, let them try. Let them try at home with you doing DIY. Let them do something. Show them how to use a tool. It's useful. My father made all of us learn how to change a tire. He had four daughters. Got to know how to change a tire, right? So that's what we did. So do that with your daughters, is you allow them to just give it a try.
I think too that learning that there's things you don't want to do is just as valuable as finding out the things you do want to do.
Absolutely. I agree. I agree. I agree. How many people went into a profession and they just hate it? They just hate it, but they were kind of pushed that way because, like, I don't know, when we were coming up, we had typing class. I didn't want to type. I didn't want to type. It was that and this secretarial stuff. I was really good at shorthand. I never went to school. It was squiggly lines, so I understood it. It was creative to me. But why am I trying to be a secretary? I don't want to be a secretary. I never wanted to be a secretary, you know? And it was like, I want to play sports and I want to, you know, hang out with my brother and his friends, play some touch football or something. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And it's really sad when you see young girls being directed into another area, right? I think, you know, in our age group, we've been there. We've seen it. We didn't get the opportunity. So you become a first of a lot of things, right? I was the first in Saturday morning basketball. I was the first in the carpentry stuff. It was like, okay, that's fine. And it's okay to be different from everybody else. And I think that's something we need to strive to communicate to these young girls. It's okay to be different.
Well, and I think it's really important for us too. You know, I mean, I mentioned at the outset that I had wanted to be an auto mechanic and or a long haul trucker. That didn't happen for me because I was not bold. We're talking the 70s. But now, if one of my granddaughters turned around and wanted to do that, I have to say, absolutely, girl, you go for it, and facilitate however I can. That she fulfills that because, you know, I mean, in recent years, I got into cars a little bit. I got a friend who still calls me a gearhead. But who knows what would have happened if I had actually pursued that career at age 23.
But who
So,
says you can't do it now?
oh no, I'm having too much fun here now. Oh dear. Okay, what haven't we talked about that you'd like to add before we wrap?
Ageism. I'd like people to know it's you're never, ever too old to start something new. I started this at 60. I am now 65. And sometimes I look in the mirror and say, wow, who thought you would do this at this age? Right. And then a friend reminded me, he said, but think about Julia Childs. I'm like, what? She was 50 something. How many times did she get her book get rejected? I think her book came out when she was 55 or something like that. Or, and she was just amazing. And she had a 30-year run. She was in her 80s, right? So you're never too old to start something new and to be something unusual. Did you think you would be sitting here talking on the podcast?
Not at all. But first of all, ageism is one of my soapboxes. But second of all, I'm going to get you on another podcast called Don't Be Caged by Your Age.
Ah, I love
Andy
that.
Lyons is amazing. She's
I
one of my
love
go-to gals.
that. I love that. Yeah. I tell women all the time, when I tell them I'm 65, they're like, that's just not, no. Yeah, you can start over. You can start over. And that's one of the things I didn't say to you, Agnes. A lot of the women coming into the trades, this is their second career. They finally got the nerve to leave that first career that they hated. And they go to construction. They're finding out they like it better. And they're making, more money.
It's interesting because I just talked to my son the other day and we were talking about different things. And I said, because I'm 70, I said, I've just got to turn around now and get my ass in gear about this next thing that I want to do. And it's just there's no limit. There's no limit except
I
what's in
love
your
that.
brain.
I love that. I love that for you. I love it for me. I love it for all women, is that we don't have to stop. I am a firm believer. If you stop moving, you die. I just believe that. So there's, if you just keep moving, you keep thinking of new things to do, new ideas, everything keeps clicking. It keeps working. And yeah, I'm excited. I love meeting women like you that think like I do. It's like, yeah, we can still do this. We're 85, but we can still do this.
That's right. I may do it a little bit slower, but I'm still doing
Absolutely,
it.
absolutely. I'll tell you this last thing is my girlfriends and I, we all turned 65 this year. We decided to have a pajama party. Well, let me tell you, the pajama party never happened because we all fell asleep before 9 o'clock. Just never happened. So it was hilarious to me that we're 65, but there are women that I know that are older than me that just never stop. And they're so full of life and they have these wonderful ideas and you are never too old to start something new. That is my mantra to all women. You are never too old to start something new. I can put that on a t-shirt.
There you go. Of course, yeah, because you're doing all these t-shirts now. That's great. Oh, dear. Now that should be where this podcast just ends. But you need to tell us where we find you on the World Wide Web.
You can find me at GodStreetBlues.com where you went. You can also find me on YouTube, GodStreetBlues underscore 2020. I am on LinkedIn. I am also on Facebook under GodStreet and Instagram and TikTok. I forgot about TikTok.
Okay, that's great. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure, you sure can.
You touched on it briefly, but you also have a thing for horticulture.
I do. I love gardening. I got it from my mother. She had the most beautiful, just beautiful yard. And we moved from a very small apartment with a very tiny backyard with dirt that we never left. The kids never left. We loved it. We moved into a bigger house, beautiful landscaping that she did, and she taught us all how to garden. We all know how to garden. And we couldn't play in it because if the ball went in the garden, we got yelled at, right? So it was like, we don't want to be in the yard. But I got my love of gardening from her. The one thing I remember is walking out the side door with this huge lilac bush, just the fragrance,
Yeah,
just
I love
hitting
lilac.
you in the face, and these gorgeous flowers. And every year, I go down to Grant Park, Illinois, to Sunrise Nursery. Just had my trip last week and just my husband panics because it's like, I'm not gonna spend that much. I promise I'm not gonna spend that much. And I'm always the one that spends more money. I do love horticultural. stuff. And I actually had a t-shirt shop. My first t-shirt shop was called Horticultural Delights. And it was all garden themed t-shirts. And that just kind of pushed me, oh, you can do trade t-shirts, you know, that kind of thing. So yes. And I'm excited, and I would, you know, be super honored to send you a pair of these pants. Since you are a DIYer, you got a toolbox. You told me you got a toolbox. So
Three of
I'm going to keep you on my list,
them.
Agnes, and I would love for you to tell me how you like the pants.
I would love that. And
Super.
I'll have you know that I am the person who makes sure all of the grandchildren have their own toolboxes.
Oh my
And
God,
there
that's so
are no
wonderful.
pinky girly toolboxes
There's
amongst
no have to send you a picture of that toolbox. You will die when you see this thing. It looks like something that you'd have seen on the Barbie movie. When I look at it, it's like, this is ridiculous. I actually went in there like that. It was so ridiculous.
Well, nowadays, if you were to go on a job site, you should take that, but just make sure you got the real one in
Oh my God.
the
Yeah, because I had that big honking thing after with all my tools and stuff in it. So
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
it was
Yeah.
great. But yes, Agnes, I want to send me, you know, you got my email, send me your number and stuff so I can send these to you. I would really love to hear what you have to say about these pants.
I'll just be wearing them nonstop. Dear, that's great. Okay, your website link is in the show notes, and all of the links are on your page at our website. Okay,
Great.
listeners,
Great.
were any of you closet tradespeople like I was? Do you have a tradeswoman in your life now that you can't wait to tell about Max's clothing line? Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or was there something Max and I didn't discuss? Tell me in the comments and I'll get you a response. Share this episode. Several reasons. First of all, I think Max's whole concept is long overdue. There are so many women in the trades now. And also, let's do everything we can to get a boomer sister successful in her new venture. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button and help us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Brenda Cumby McGee, Max, thank you for being my guest today and promoting not only women in the trades, but making sure they're comfortable and safe while they're doing it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Agnes. I enjoyed it immensely. Thank you.
It was great. Have a great rest of week.
Thank you. You too.